All right. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Stage Right. This week, we have one of my best friends, one of the best dudes I fucking know, Mr. Hossein Attar.
Respect, my brother.
Tour manager for The Stars, people like Spearhead, The Wailers, Reb, Mr. Jacob Banks. Who am I missing, Hoss?
Groundation, Miss Lauryn Hill. Yeah, I did a bunch of, Israel Vibes. I just go through my laminates to remind myself who I worked for. That's the only I can remember it anymore. But it's been quite the road, man. I've enjoyed every bit of it. There's high. I stay on the highs. Fuck the lows. I don't need them. It's just it's a good life. At the same time, it's there's a lot of shit that goes on, bro. You know.
Yeah, man. We like to accentuate the positive and try to eliminate the negative.
Yeah, there's enough of that shit with artists alone. The ego alone can really bring you down. So it's like when you're around crew and band members that keep you high, dude, that's the best high to stay on. It's just, that's why I love my crew more than I love the band, because my crew in the end of the day is they're looking out for you. That's just it.
Actually, one of like my favorite days off I've ever had was when we were touring together with Spearhead, and you wake me up and you're like, "Hey, how much do you weigh?" And I was like, "What, dude? I've never been woken up like this. So weird." And then later that day, you know, we ended up taking a helicopter in Bend, Oregon to a fucking beautiful weed farm out there. One of our friends,
man, Jeremy, my friend Jeremy, who lives in Bend, first and foremost, man, him and his family are really super kind people. I met him in Bend maybe 15 years ago on tour, and it was really funny. The way I met him is he came to a gig where Spearhead was playing, and those guys don't really smoke herb, but he was locked out of the gate because the gate was closed. And Bulby, my sound engineer, you remember Bulby from...
Yep. Shout out Bulby, man. Legend. Guy's a Jamaican legend.
When we talk of Bulby, you're talking Sly and Robbie, you're talking Barris Hammond, just legends upon legends upon legends. He's worked for them all. But Bulby was coming off the bus and Jeremy screamed, "Hey, I'm trying to get some weed to the artist." And Bulby said to him, "Hold on one second." And he went back to the bus and he said, "I think somebody's here for you, Hossein." And I walked out. Bro, when someone hands you a jar like this, it's super kind. When someone hands you a jar like this, it's really kind. When someone hands you a jar like that, bro, that becomes a brother instantly. I mean, he handed me this jar of weed that I've never seen or smoked before. And we just stayed in contact like daily. Like, he started coming to all the shows. Any show that he needed to get in Oregon, you know, I would set him up with tickets, not just who I was on tour with, but whatever artist he wanted to get to make sure he could do the same thing, whether it was the Marleys. That was the other groups that I worked for. I worked for Damien. I worked for Steven. I worked for those guys too. But so with him, he runs a huge farm, Davis Farms. And I what was it, 2018? Is that about right?
18.
He had called me and said, "Hey, man, I want to get your crew and you out to the farm." And I said to him, "Bro, I don't have that much time this time." And he said, "Well, what's it gonna take?" And I said, "You got a helicopter to get us there?" And sure enough, bro, he called and he had a couple helicopters ready for us to get on this flight, dude. So that's basically why I asked you how much you weigh, because I wanted to make sure you got on that plane on that helicopter with us. And it's like, it's those type of friendships and relationships that I'm grateful for, man, because it's not every day that you you jump on a chopper just to go get herb. It's not like that every day. So for us to be able to go do that, man, it truly was a blessing. And I'm glad you were with me when we did that. That's so great. Yeah.
Man, me too. That was my first time on a helicopter ever. And for it to be that way was just incredible.
Oh, yeah. Man. I remember Raul was with us.
Raul was with us. Jay. Yeah, dude. Balby came out.
That was a good time, man.
And I think that was it. Yeah. That was a great time, dude.
Who goes to get weed with a helicopter?
Just came back with like a brick of hash and jars of weed. Oh my God. And this herb is like some of the best.
Well, that's what I learned about him is some people grow weed, but he's a scientist. Like that's what I literally in my phone, it says Jeremy the scientist. I mean, that's what I have him under my phone as. So it's been like, and I've stayed in contact with him. He's doing really well. And he sends his love always, man. He always loves the crew and any friend of mine is a friend of his. So you're always welcome to go back there, even if I'm not there.
One of my favorite things from touring also, the relationships that you got to build and create with people like you, man. It's and Chris.
Bro, it's vital to me to be friends with the people that I work with, because anybody can work. That's easy. But if you can't get along and vibe along with somebody or see what their needs are to make them enjoy what they're doing, because what people don't really get in our line of work is everyone says to us, oh man, you guys got the greatest life, da da da. It's like really 11 months away from our family and our loved ones and the people that really matter to us. Not that the people on the road don't, but the people that you've spent your life with as far as your family, to be away from them that long, bro, that's hard.
It's super hard,
dude,
man.
You miss the birthdays, you miss the reunions.
Some of the people whose weddings, you miss some people who pass away. I mean, you miss growth, you miss things like just things that happen that you want to be a part of, but you're so deep in your work that you just like. And the other thing too that I noticed too is that being on the road a lot of time, you become isolated from the rest of the world.
It's a fake life. It's like a completely different world. You're taken care of, you got per diem.
Yep. It's like, that's what I keep telling people. I'm like, you see it from one side and that's the stage. That's all you see. You don't see what we go through. It's like an artist can make it look like one thing, but we know the real thing as far as being the backbone to these artists. Because truth be said, these artists can't stand unless they're standing on our backs. This is bottom line. I mean,
the people are seeing the finished product, the finished painting, the finished building. They're not seeing the blood, sweat, and tears that go into creating and putting up the tour.
No, they didn't see what it took to stretch that canvas, to get the right paints, the right colors. I mean, all that stuff takes us. In the end of the day, it's the soldiers that make the army. It's not the captain.
That's a great reference, because I think some things a lot of people don't understand about tour, like we talked about relationships, is how strong those bonds can be. Like, you're a soldier on the battlefield. I mean, a lot of people have told me, like, well, they're just like tour friends. You know, I'm like, no. Los is my fucking brother. Like, this will last forever. Like, they don't get that.
When Carlos calls and says, I'm in town, there's no hinges on my door. It's like the door's open.
Yeah.
Just come in. It's like, just walk in. Because that's what you do for those same person. I mean, I've been on a road with Carlos, and there's been plenty of times when an artist says one thing and this and that, but you know that the artist isn't being honest or whatever. And I have to defend the guys that I work with, because I know the truth and I know exactly what happened. But it's really funky how sometimes that's how it works. That's why I say soldiers, because it's the same thing with the ship. Like, anybody can, every ship needs a captain, but a captain can't run a ship without sailors. It just doesn't work. Yeah, he can't do it. I mean, he's just going to sit there and point directions. That's great. I need you to point directions while I'm blood, sweat, and tears for you. That's fine. But at the end of the day, I should be getting the same pay.
You know, man, shit. Dude. You're one of those tour managers that definitely takes care of his crew and whoever, you know, everyone that's on the tour, everyone that's working for the tour that day. And I love to see that, man. And I respect that a lot too, to that the fact that you can just go to the artist and you're like, hey man, this is not real. We were just on a plane for 16 hours. You said no about this earlier and now you change your mind. Give me some time to figure it out. Or like, hey, Carlos can't physically be in two places at once.
No, sometimes the things that they ask for are just, that's the thing. It's like, that's why the job title is called tour manager. I'm supposed to manage that stuff to make the realistic happen. And then also manage the artist to basically get off as, you're too far up there. It's like, come back down to reality. Like the things that you're asking for, I physically can't be doing to my crew because you're not physically going through what they're going through. You're just telling me to do this, do that, do this, but you don't realize what they've already done to make that stuff happen for you. And bottom line is they're going to do exactly. That's why when I'm with my, as a tour manager, I'm a tour manager for the band, but I'm a tour member for my crew. I don't ever put my crew behind me. Like I walk side by side with my crew because I can't set up a stage. I can't play the drums. I can't do the monitor board. I can't do any of that stuff. But if I make sure that my crew is treated with nothing but respect, integrity, and the whatever they need, whenever they need it, bro, you give an inch, you get a mile.
Boom.
100%. Yes. You remind me a lot of one of my favorite tour managers, Toby Scott. He's a big country guy out in Nashville. And he was just all for his crew. Like I remember one night he went out gambling in Vegas, came back to the bus, was like, guys, I fucking made like $1,000. And we were like, yeah, cool. Good for you, man. He's like, we're going out to dinner right now. Whatever you guys want, I'm dropping everything I won for you guys to keep you guys happy. And I was like, wow, fuck yeah, dude. Thank you.
But that's the way it should be. It's like, man,
money doesn't matter, man. Those moments, Chris and hosts, man, that we've had, that I don't even know how much we spent some of those days, but the memory that made is,
yeah,
forever, bro. Forever.
You know? You and I, we've dropped some money on food together. We've dropped some money on sushi loaves.
Oh,
man. Listen, Minneapolis.
Yeah, me and you are foodies. Me and hosts are like foodies too, but also we are the vinyl brothers, man.
We drop cash on vinyl and it's like...
My heaviest spend has been with you, hosts, at Amoeba Records in LA.
I got to get on point. I've got a $10,000 hi-fi, but my vinyl collection is nowhere near low. So I have the system... But yeah, I'm still out, like,
you did
I'm,
it backwards. At, like, two, you got the system first.
I got like 200 records, but I got a $10,000 system.
I got into it more with Los on tour with me because he started expressing to me the value of vinyl versus, you know, just picking up an album to listen to, which I still do. I love picking up an album and listening to it for what it is. But to pick it up and know the value of the album and what it's really worth in the sense of what's created on it, who's done it, and then how to protect it, how to care for it. Because, man, some of that music is just, it's priceless. And when it comes off wax, bro, there's nothing warmer. There's no warmer feeling than listening to something on wax. It's for me. I mean, I don't.
Oof. Yeah, no, I agree. And I also think a special part of it that makes it so nice is number one, the sound, but also the ritual. Because I wipe off my Plexi table, I wipe my record, you put the needle down, you sit back on the couch and you listen through that whole thing. It's
the art of
experience,
listening, man. And listening to a whole album.
It's physical. Like there's actually waveforms on that disc you're holding.
Yeah, you, Carlos, you really turned me into a vinyl snob. I guess that's the...
Hell yeah, man.
But I love it.
Oh, dude. Yeah, we spent that record store day together in Chicago.
Oh, God. That was my first record store day. Like, I was like, where are we going? You're like, bro, you've never been to a record store day? And I was like, nope. And I'm like, why is there a line? And you're like, oh, bro, just wait. And I was like, then it just became like crack. Like, I would literally... Bro, I got to tell you a quick story just in regards to that. So I'm in Berkeley and we have an Amoeba by my house, right on a Telegraph. So when Lois introduced me to Record Store Day, I was like, okay, we're home. So I'm going to go to Record Store Day in Berkeley. But I remember when we were, was it Chicago we were in?
It was Chicago, yeah.
And I was like, man, there's a line. So what I did was I went down to the marina where there's a lot of laborers, you know, day workers and things like that.
Oh,
yeah. And I asked this guy, I said, hey, bro, you want to make, you know, $80? And he's like, for sure. So I picked him up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I took him to the record store. He was number 5 in line. And I left him there until 11:58. And when I got back to the record store, I kid you not, there was probably about 800 people in line. And I walked up to the guy and I handed him the other half of the money and I stepped in line and he walked out and people looked at me like, wait, what just happened? I said, oh, I just paid this guy to wait in line for me. And they just, like, just, they were like, that
host is living in the year 3000.
Yeah, they were like,
dude,
that is brilliant. And I was just like, but not understanding Record Store Day. I went in there and started grabbing like 4 or 5 copies of everything. And they're like, no, it's one of everything. And I was like, oh, so I started putting shit back. I was just like, but man,
oh my God.
After that, I figured out Record Store Day. I'm like, I got this figured out.
Yeah, I don't think you've missed a beat.
I'm ready for the day ahead. It's like the day before, I'm ready.
Yeah, you prep, you get the list. You're like, okay, you highlight the ones you want.
Oh, yeah. And then I get a couple guys so ready. Exciting. I'm like, if you can't do it, this guy's got to get in line too.
You need to start like an app, yeah, like Uber, like wait in line.
I thought about one, an app for Hawaii, and I was and you know how they have Uber here?
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to call it Ubra.
That's the dumbest name.
Yeah. Ubra. Oh, brah. Where you want to go, brah?
Oh, so tell me about how did you end up in the music industry? What inspired you to like get in it?
Well, you know, the first thing I was doing was I was working in the stock market, but I always had a love for music and especially reggae music, a huge love for it. And my godfather, his name is Pretty. And when I met Pretty, it was at Reggae on the River. And this was like 1997, something like that. And at that time, he was the tour manager for the Fugees.
Wow. Wow. What a time.
Yeah. And that's how I ended up working with Miss Hill. And but he basically took me under his wing and kind of taught me everything. And I didn't want to do the stock market anymore, but he also said, you know, you can't just quit making money and unless you're ready for this kind of lifestyle, because you may not make that kind of money that you make. But I literally, I always say leap because the net will appear. Just take a leap. I mean, it's going to appear no matter what. As long as you have faith in yourself, you'll be fine. So I did. And, I hooked up with this band called Groundation.
I love them, man.
They're phenomenal. And what was coming out of Groundation, musically, bro, I don't care what color you were, there was nobody doing that. Like, dude, jazz infused with reggae. And every one of them had a degree in jazz music.
You can feel that. You feel that. You hear that for sure. There's so much complexity. It's, yeah.
By all means. And so, once I hooked up with them, literally just, I left Prudential. That's where I was working at the time. And I was making, you know, almost $100,000 a year. For that time for me, that was a lot of money.
So were you like and proper, then, you were suit and tie Wall Street? Like,
oh, bro. Suit and tie with bro. Dreads and a bong like that. No one saw. But I left that to make $500 a month. And so I left that to do that. And we jumped on a school bus that had no... let me get rid of her. Hold on. Maggie, quiet. Outside. Go. And so we jumped on a school bus and we toured all over the United States and we did what we loved. And then to be all of a sudden recognized in France was like, that was it. They made it so big in Europe. And then the rest of the rest of the world kind of caught on to them. The States didn't catch on too much because back then, it's still even today, reggae was just considered kind of like a Jamaican thing, you know? And it's music is music. There's no, I mean, you can classify it any way you want, but good music is good music. Bad music is bad music. That's just it. I don't care what kind of music it is. If it's bad, I don't like it.
Yeah, fuck the genre, man. If it's good music, it's good music. Doesn't matter who's making it, where it's coming from, what genre it is.
No. And for me, it was like the experience. They didn't have a tour manager. They never had one. They didn't know what to do. I knew how to take the lead on things and basically guide us to where we needed to go. But they did what they did on stage. And to this day, I still think they're one of the greatest reggae bands to touch the stage. I mean, musically, I've never seen such a talented group of musicians in my life to this day. Like, and I mean, I've seen a lot of musicians, but those guys, bro, they can play music. They really, really can.
Yeah, they can. So I have a question for you, like kind of going through this origin story. What I feel like tour managers have a very distinct personality. And I feel like it's a lot of confidence, strength. Did you feel that when you first started? Like, what drew you to be a tour manager and how did you get so successful at it? Is it because of your persona? Because you're such a strong persona?
Yes, definitely. Taking on a leadership role and feeling comfortable in it and not making them have to worry about everything. You know, it's kind of like, they're like lost sheep and I'm a sheep herder.
But did you feel that initially or did you grow into that confidence?
No, you know what? When I went out on the road my first time, I was scared. I was nervous. I didn't know what they expected from me. Like even just to go check into hotels, I was like, what do you guys, like, how do we? Yeah. But each time we did it, I became more and more confident. And they also, they gave me that confidence too, where they're like, awesome, man. Well, you know, just.
That's so important, man, for a band to, especially when you're learning and maybe they're learning too at the same time, or maybe if they've been on the road for a while, they're patient with you, with your path, you know?
That's what it was. This was all our first time. They all gave up their jobs too. This is like, we all just jumped on it. Literally, when I say a school bus, bro, it was a school bus. And it was in the winter and we were taking stage towels. We were stealing them every night from the venues. And tucking them, the stage towels, we were tucking them in the windows because there was no heater on the bus. And everybody would be sitting like super close to each other with ski jackets on. And it was just like, but I mean, those are paying your dues. I mean, it literally, that's what it felt like to me. And then to finally, you know, end up on my own bus or, and those kind of things, it's like, if I didn't experience those things, I wouldn't be able to appreciate what I have, you know, what I had now.
Like, 100%.
And you can't. And that's the problem, I think, today with a lot of these artists or tour managers. They, you know, they just get thrown into it and all of a sudden they're like, oh, I need to be treated like. I'm like, you don't know jack shit and I'm not going to treat you like that. It's the same thing like with every bus that I've ever been on. For me, it's like, I want to make sure my crew is happy on that bus. They can get whatever they want out of that bus because I've been on the bus. I've been there. But when you get crew members demanding this and demand, I'm like, how many times have you been on tour? Oh, it's my second tour. I'm like,
bitch.
And you've always been on a bus. Like, yeah, I've noticed that when people haven't been in a van or like a bandwagon or any other kind of situation that's not a bus, they're way more needy and spoiled in the bus. God.
Yeah.
It's like... until you experience what it's like to sit in a van for 8 hours or sit in a car with somebody for 8 hours just to go to a venue to get $500. I mean, and a tray full of carrots and celery and fucking ranch dressing.
You don't know. I'm 26. I'm young, but I still, when I was 17, wasn't allowed to do sound in a venue and sat in a 15 passenger until 3 a.m. for bar close in Chicago in the winter watching rats run in front of the car.
Oh, God, bro. I mean, that was my thing as a tour manager, too, though. I had to drive the van. I had to drive, you know, load up the van after because it was just me and, like, two other crew members. And it's like, the band ain't doing that. Like, they felt like they didn't need to do that. And I'm like,
they're
okay,
not
gonna
set up the merch and settle the show.
Yeah, and we had to do all of that. Like, I had to set up the merch. I had to set up all of that stuff. And then, you know, the other thing that I remember with Groundation was we didn't have a merch person. I did the merch. After getting set up with the band on stage and getting everything that they needed, literally before the show started, I had to go 10 minutes and then go set up the merch. And mind you, that's when most people are buying merch. So after I got their set up, I had to go run back to the merch, set everything up, and then try to sell as much as possible before the show started.
Man, tour managing is just one of those jobs that, unfortunately, a lot of the times when you're starting out, you have to wear several hats. But later on, it should not even be that way. Tour manager should be dedicated to just that position, man. It takes up so
much.
Yeah,
I mean, there was a lot of bands that I worked for that I had to do a lot of different things, which I didn't mind because it got me better at my job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it got me to also respect each one of my crew members' jobs. It's like, respect your crew because without them, you ain't shit. It really is a fact.
Hell yeah, man.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. It's just, amen. It is. It's just never, it's not said enough. I mean, it really is just not said enough. We don't say thank you enough to them. It's like, dude, when these artists get their Grammys and get their all their awards, dude, that's the first person they should be saying thanks. I want to thank my crew.
Road crew. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm feeling so empowered by this conversation.
it's facts.
What get to be my tour manager? I fucking love you. What the fuck?
You know, I love what I do. I really, really do. What I don't love about my business is working for frauds because it's an extension of me. And I don't want, when you go up on stage and you preach all this shit and do all this stuff and then turn around and like do all these other things that aren't what you preached up on stage, that's a reflection of me because I'm with you.
Yeah, you're representing your artist. You're, you know, working for them. So
yeah, it's like I don't go up there and play Jesus and then turn around and fucking live like Judas. We got enough of that already. I don't need any. I'm okay walking away from that. You know, it's funny.
Yeah, man. Like you said, you spend more time on the road with these people, the artists you're working for, your crew, more time than you do with your family. So I say, hey, you can choose that. There's tons of people that you can work for. So if you don't want to be in an environment like that, just leave. You have the power to choose, man. Always.
There's a little saying, you know, lions, they don't eat grass at all. No matter how fucking hungry they are, they don't eat it. They don't settle. And it's like, they'll wait to get the meat, no matter how much they gotta fucking suffer. And I'm the same way. I don't give a fuck about the grass. I know that shit's, there's plenty of it everywhere, but I know what I fucking eat and I know what I deserve. I deserve the meat. I don't have to survive off fucking grass.
That's what I'm saying. It makes a big difference when you're working for an artist or a band that really appreciates you and understands the camaraderie of the road. And not just the band, but the crew. Like, the crew's an extension of the band.
That's what needs to be more spoken about is the family unit. Dude, I don't know. That's it. And you know, I don't know if many of your followers or have listened to Jacob Banks. That's after I quit Fronti, I literally went out with this artist because I appreciated his music. Mind you, I got a job offer for Anderson .Paak and Kendrick Lamar, but I was taking a break. And mind you, those are big artists, but I know who I am. I know what I'm worth. And so I was like, no, I'm going to take a break for myself. So I took that break, and then Jacob reached out to me. And I said, no problem. We were going out with Maggie Rogers, and then we went out with City in Color. And I'm telling you, man, this kid, when I say kid, he's like 27, 28 years old. But the mature level of somebody like that, I was blown away. He went on stage. I put him on stage. He'd play his music. After the music, he went back to the dressing room and would get back into whatever he was in, PlayStation, whatever it was. You know, I toured for Revolution. And I got to say, that's the one thing about Eric is that he didn't do that either. I mean, that's why so many people love Revolution and they love Eric Rachmani is because he went up there and just said, dude, we're good vibes. We're just here to play good vibes music and enjoy. It's like Iration, like the guys that you were, same shit. We're just here to play music. We're here to make people smile and enjoy themselves. It's not like coming out with like, oh, I'm a leader of this or I found this and love is the only way. It's like, bro, people got problems. People got issues. They come here to listen to music. They didn't come here to hear your fucking personal rant about what you're going through. This, I think, I got my own problems.
Yeah. While we're shouting out, circling a little bit back to crew love and also not just preaching on stage, I have to shout out the whole Mickey Echo crew. It was one of my super early tours. I was 19 years old. They were playing pretty big venues and they brought me in like a brother. And they taught me everything and they're still lifelong friends. And that's super rare for me as a tech to have a band become like people that I talk to pretty frequently. And when I go to those cities, I call them and we hang out and they bring me to their homes and all that stuff, you know?
As the way it should be.
Yeah, man. We can sit down at the same table, man. My door's open.
Like I said, it's like, just be you. Don't try to be something else. Like, it's like, just be honest. People appreciate that more. It's
just
like,
be honest, man. Yeah. But instead of being like an artist, like, dude, just figure out like what's going to make you different and stand out and not the same and not use the same words and the same melodies and things like
100, if not 1000%, bro. It's like watching some of these guys. I'm like, no wonder you guys put yourselves in genres because that's what you guys have done. You like, you're claiming that you're all spiritual leaders. I'm like, you couldn't lead fucking, you couldn't lead
your crew on stage.
It's like, we got involved with it because it's a business. We like what we do, but it's still, I'm not doing it for free. I got to get paid. I got to make money. But to go up on an app and try to sit there and say to somebody, oh, you know, I can guide you for $14.95 and I can tell you that, dude, really? It's like, this is a time for people to create more honesty with themselves than ever possible. This is when you should strip yourself down to as naked as you can be and look at yourself and be like, I'm a fuck up. Or I've got these flaws. I got these faults. Instead of fucking putting clothes on them so no one sees them anymore. Here, look, man, this is what's going on. I'm a junkie, or I smoke too much weed, or I drink too much. I need help. Who can help me? How my friends can help me? Any of my fans out there going through what I'm going through? Instead, they want to sit there and be like, oh, you know, I can guide you to this. I can get, motherfucker, I don't need that.
So when's your next seminar?
Sorry?
When's your next seminar? Is that the Hilton or?
People are telling you that they have it all figured out. Don't have it all figured out. Nobody has it all figured out.
No, but nobody has it all figured out. And the thing is like, I respect more people who come and say, hey man, I don't got to figure it out either. Let's work together and see how we can figure it out together. Because these clowns that just do all this Johnny talk a lot bullshit. I'm like, wow, man, how do you feel about yourself after? Like, does it make you really feel that good? Yeah. And they do. You know why? Because vampires, they don't sleep at night. That's why. They avoid the daytime so they can live in the night because there's no fucking shadow and there's no conscience following them. That's why. It's like, but you, me, us, we wake up feeling good about ourselves because we did something good for ourselves. And I'm not saying all artists are like that. No. But they all can fall down that road because they think that's the key to success. And I'm like, the problem is there is no key to success. Success is how you feel inside. You don't need a fucking key to open it. We all have success. We all successful. Don't fucking try to tell me you're more successful than me or I'm more successful than him. It's not that way. My success is just different than your success. Like my relationship with my parents, that's my success. I love my parents and my family more than anything. And I will drop everything for my family.
Same.
And people say to me, man, I wish I had that. I don't talk to my parents. And I'm like, well, then that tells me that I'm successful in what I do for my family. But that doesn't mean you can't be successful in it too. But with music and things like that, people think like it's a financial thing. And it's like, it's not, you know, Chronix put it the best. One of the best lyrics I heard him say is it's not about the likes. It's about the love. Who the fuck cares about the likes? Because 20 years ago, there were no likes.
That shit didn't exist. Exactly.
There was no MySpace. There was no Facebook. There was no InstaScam. There was no fucking whatever else crap you got going on. It's like, they should call it InstaLie.
I call it the highlight reel because, you know, people just get the wrong idea a lot of the times. And it's because of that, you know, because people only post the highlights and the best moments of their life. And hey, man, that's cool. I get it. But at the same time, you're not being honest.
That's the part.
There's so many dicks out there who are posting photos of like eggs breaking, like when they break the yolks at a restaurant or, you know, their food.
Yeah, I just...
That's Carlo, sorry.
But that's real. That really,
he is actually eating that egg, yes
that
he
That really
is.
Fucking yeah. happened.
Yeah.
It's like when someone gets up there and says, oh, I'm posting myself now as I'm 145 pounds and last 3 months ago, I was 240. Motherfucker, post you when you were 240. Why don't you talk about it then? It's like, you only want me to see. That's why I say it's like, you get up on stage to play Jesus. But motherfucker, you live in like Judas. So it's pointless. I would rather you walk on stage and just be fucking Judas and be like,
rock the fuck out. Is
That's
yeah,
it, man. It's like, fuck, yeah. That's who you are. I accept you for that. And that's why I like you for who you are. I mean. Yeah.
And then we don't have to put up an act too of like people coming up like, oh my God, this person's so amazing.
No. And then you put it on us to be like, oh, hey, make sure you're like this with people. I'm like, dude, I'm not like that with people. So why the fuck are you asking me to be like that with people? That's not who I am. You didn't hire me to be one of your 12 disciples. You hired me to do your sound. But you will not take my integrity and try to take that shit and change me to be what you want. That doesn't work.
No, dude. At that moment, you have the full right to leave.
No, whether I'm on stage or I'm sitting at home on the couch with my fucking dog, or if I'm helping some fucking neighbor, my integrity is what's important to me.
Speaking of things that we signed up for, one of the things I fucking love and drew me a lot to touring was the fact that I was going to get paid to travel and see all these cool spots and places. What's been one of your favorite cities or country that you've been to?
With that question, the first thing I always say is my favorite place to travel is home.
Oof.
Just because...
You're never there.
Yeah, exactly. But one of my favorite places that I've been, wow, that's, I really, really enjoyed being in Antigua. And one of the guys asked me what I wanted to do. And Jay Bowman and I said, we just want to go check out an island. And the guy's like, okay. This dude took us out to one of these small islands in Antigua, because there's a bunch of little islands that surround it. And he said, hey, I'm going to drop you guys off and I'll come back in a few hours. And I was like, okay, but where is everybody? He's like, oh, there's nobody here. There's nobody on this island. And I was like, wait, what? He's like, this is your own island. And we literally were like, what the fuck? So me and Jay sat in the sand like two 12-year-olds and kicked our feet in the waves and played with the crabs that were coming back and forth. Like, I mean, I have to say that and being dropped off in the Great Barrier Reef and never, and I didn't know how to scuba dive or anything like that. And we met some woman. Again, I was with Jay Bowman, and we met some woman who wanted to take us there. And we were like, we don't know how to scuba dive. She's like, don't worry, I'm a scuba dive teacher. I'll teach you all that stuff. And we're like, okay. She literally took us to a pool, a swimming pool, put the tanks on us, put the gauge in our mouths. We went underwater for about 5 minutes to breathe. She goes, you guys passed. We're like, what?
Sick.
She took us out into the Great Barrier Reef, dropped us off with her, obviously. Bro, I've never seen anything. It's a whole nother life underneath the ocean. And we were underneath there. And I said, the one thing I asked her, I said, I don't want to see a shark. And she was like, don't worry, I'm here. Nothing's going to happen. So, you know, they videotaped it. It was beautiful. We saw so many beautiful creatures. I got back to the hotel. She gave me the video. I watched the whole video. At the end of the video, as we're getting up on the boat, she scans across and there's a fucking shark racing back and forth. I was like, no dude, way. That's Holy it. That's shit. It. I'm like, I'm done. Jaws ruined me as a kid. Okay. It just ruined me. But I've enjoyed everywhere that I've traveled, to be honest. I can't really, because it's the company that I've traveled with that makes it enjoyable. I mean, we've gone to some crazy places and sometimes you're like, what is the joy of being in this place that I've been to 20 times? Perfect example, Chicago. I've been to Chicago a bunch of times, but when I went with you, bro, I had never been to a record store day. I mean, that changed my life. That changed my wallet's life, and that changed my life. So it's like,
oh yeah, man.
Dude, that's the same for me. Like, I've been to Seattle a million times, but Los and I went, and we went to the great pierogi spot. We sat on the fucking pier and ate these amazing pierogies, went to the coffee shop, and it was like the fucking best day off.
That's the joy of it. It's the company that you bring with you.
Totally, man. And everyone knows different spots. Like, oh, I know this spot. We should go here. And then, okay, cool. Oh, fuck. We're like right by this other spot that I know. And then everybody, you know, the people that you're with, like, are usually like-minded. So you usually have a great fucking day, man.
Yeah. Company counts, because I've gone to a bunch of places by myself and I'm like, fuck, I already been here. But to go with somebody else, I get more excited to show that person, like, oh, this is what I go check out. And then they're like, shit, I check out this. I'm like, oh, I never even knew that was there. Like, it's a joy.
For sure.
It really is, man.
Hey, so Carlos, is it time to pop the question?
Oh, it is. I think it is.
I think it might be.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, I'm ready.
You do it.
Dude, so over here at Stage Right, we ask everybody, what's your favorite bagel? Because
how do you make it? What's on it?
Yeah, what kind of bagel? What kind of spread, toppings, toast level?
I love that.
As deep in detail do you want to go? Yeah.
I love that. So for me,
I'm looking forward to this answer a lot.
There's two types of bagels that I really like. I love an everything bagel.
It's always the everything. God damn it.
But the garlic bagel
Ooh, okay.
For me is just, it's it. It's that cream cheese. Oh, bro.
Now you're talking business.
There's something about a bagel. To find a good bagel and to get it toasted right,
ooh,
bro,
that's where the difference is.
It's got to be like maybe 3/4, so it's not burnt. It's not, but it's not too chewy. Like, I need that shit to crunch.
Yeah, I need to hear the crunch, but feel the chew midway.
Exactly. Even though a bagel plain is great.
Yeah.
But
it's like a platform to build on. We've heard lemon pepper a lot, actually. Lemon pepper. I haven't tried it yet. But
lemon pepper.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden, I'm stacking that thing like a Big Mac. I'm just like,
dude. Get creative, man.
You know what I do want to try, though, I think would be good? And I'm just curious, is maybe like a po' boy bagel.
Ooh. Oh. Wow.
Like fried fish on a bagel or like fried shrimp on a bagel.
See, now you got me thinking about it, like a banh mi bagel.
Exactly. Ooh. That's what I was thinking about. And then maybe just dipping it in something and just, oh God.
Maybe some, I'm getting hungry now.
What's some advice that you can give to someone that's like an upcoming tour manager?
Pay attention to detail always. You always have to pay attention to detail because a lot of times if you don't, you miss things and then those things will catch you down the road. But the one thing that I've always said to people who are getting in my line of work is make sure your crew and you have a serious relationship together because that's your ride or die. That really is your ride. Those are the guys who are going to make you or break you. Because if your sound engineer is not happy, he's just going to fucking be mediocre. If your fucking drum tech's not fucking happy, he's not going to tighten the drums all the way down. If he's just fucking being...
Your guitar tech?
Same thing. He's just going to... The strings ain't going to be right or the sound isn't going to be... You know, it's like... But also care about their families too because their families are going through what your family's going through too. And just because I've been on the road, I've been able to adjust to that. But... Some of these youngsters and new kids that are coming out, bro, that shit can break somebody. Being away from somebody for that you love that much, to be away from them that long, dude, that's not easy. And the other thing, too, is also engage with them about coming out, you know, and bringing them out to see what you do. Because that's where trust comes to be part of the issue. It's like, if I can't see what you're doing every day and I just hear about how great it is and how fun it is and all the people you meet and all this shit, dude, I don't give a fuck who it is. The mind is going to race.
That was a game changer with my girlfriend when she actually came out on tour, you know, to see what this was because she's in corporate America. It's such a different world. You know, it's hard to understand, you know.
It's like I literally... You have to do, I've been in that situation where they're like, all I hear about is this. And the other thing too, is like, if you don't, then all they're doing is building this story in their head that not even true. It's not even close to the truth.
That's
and then when they go out
point.
There and they're like, wait, you're fucking slaving for fucking 20 something hours. Like,
and this is where you sleep and. Wow, you had to shower in this little shower after.
I'm in a coffin. This is what I sleep in right now. And there's like, oh my God, how do you live like that? Well, this is how I live. This is exactly how I live.
Talking about like two relationships too. Like now, you know, my girl knows Lo super well. They fuck around with each other on Instagram. Like she gets how like important those relationships are that we have built on tour because she's met all those tour friends.
Yeah.
She's met the ones that matter
and
the
she,
most.
Then she also knows that. You know, she's in that you're in a safe place. Like,
yeah.
When you come home and you bitching and complaining, she's like, well, who the fuck are these people that you're bitching and complaining about? And why are you bitching and complaining? And then when she sees what you're going through, she goes, oh, I get why you're bitching and complaining. Or stop bitching and complaining. It ain't that bad. You know, it's one or the other. It's like,
yeah,
it's not that easy. And it's like, and the other thing too is like, you have to have somebody who's also, who trusts you. Like,
100%.
You have to have somebody who's behind your decisions. And if you decide not to go on the road anymore, she's got to help support you in that role as well. Like, if you don't want me to do this anymore, then I won't do this if it's going to affect us this much. But you got to support me when I'm home, too, because this is what I've been doing. It's like, yeah, I don't recommend everybody be in a relationship when you first start in this business, because if it's your first time for both of you, the girlfriend and the bro, it's a make
it's
or break.
Hard.
Yeah, it can turn.
I've seen it happen to where like it ruin, you know, it kills or destroys like a marriage or a relationship where like someone wasn't touring before and now they are.
Bro, it's ended a lot for me even being on tour at the first part. I've lost like 3 or 4, you know. For me, that's the COVID blessing, frankly, because I had never spent so much time with my girlfriend until COVID, because I was always touring. You know what I mean? And now we've been living together and home for like a straight year, you know, 5 feet apart all day long, and it's still working. So like,
I got friends on the flip side of that who were like, "Bro, I can't be in a relationship And I'm like, why? She's like, I fucking see her every 5 minutes. I'm like, wait, what? Like, I was gone for months and now I'm home and she's like, she's in the room. She's in this room. She's in that room. I'm like, I get it. I mean,
yeah.
We're accustomed to a certain lifestyle of living. And then all of a sudden something just changed it. Now we have to adjust to it. But mind you, she's also been independent too. So she probably sick of seeing your ass. It's like, at some point, it's like,
dude, totally. I'm blessed for that. Cause it's gone. I mean, we've gotten closer than we ever have before. You know what I mean?
That like, is the blessing of it. It really is. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I think, for me too, I've learned more about my relationships.
100%.
And my friendships with people, like what I value about them more than anything. It's not just the time spent on the road. It's their family members. It's their animals. It's their parents. It's their well-being. It's their health. It's like, that's what I'm concerned with. Cause I was concerned with that when I was on the road with you.
Check up on people and your people.
Yeah. It's like check up and check in, because if not, some of these people are going to check out and you're not even going to know it. And that's what I value more than anything about being on tour is, bro, you can get a paycheck anywhere. But to be locked up with somebody on a submarine, basically, and in such tight corners, and to be able to get along, bro, that's a fucking battle in itself. And it's also a gift when you can do that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, it's yeah, I'm very grateful for those relationships that I have. Shit, I still talk to Manas, one of my dear friends. You know, he's a drummer. Carl Young, he's a bass player. Jay Bowman, who's a guitar player. Raul, you know, he's a guitar tech. Bulby, who's a sound engineer. It's like the list goes on and on. It's like, those are people that I've spent my life with. Those are people I've cried with. Like, those are people who've said, my mom just died. Those are people who said, my cousin just got killed. It's like, and they have nobody else to talk to because you're the only person on the road with them.
You end up becoming family. That's how you end up becoming family out on the road, man. Because moments like that happen and you got to be there for one another.
I've told Los things that only Los knows. Like, it really does extend way past just being on the road. You know what I mean?
Bro, the story I'm going to tell you, bro, is fucking hilarious. Like, you're not going to believe that this shit happened to me, dude. You're going to be like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? This was my last tour that I was on before this pandemic hit. So this is what happens. I'm in my hotel room. It's a day off. It's 9 o'clock at night. And I'm in my room. And I decided to put on Netflix. So I'm sitting in front of my computer and I'm watching Netflix and I put on the movie, The Fan. There's a scene in the movie where the fan becomes obsessed with the baseball player and decides to go to his house. Like midday.
Like just stalker vibes.
Totally.
Okay.
And he shows up at his house and it just gets really panicky. Like the baseball player is like, dude, what are you doing here? He's like, look, man, I'm a fan. He's like, no, man. And then the fan becomes crazed and basically he's got a gun. So I'm watching this and I fall asleep.
Oh no.
And the scene is going, look, man, I'm not here to hurt you. I don't want any problems. He's like, look, man, you got to get out. So all this is going on, the whole scenario in the movie. And then, but I fell asleep. As I'm sleeping, I'm hearing in a distance,
hello, hello.
And I'm like, what? And I wake up. And I realized I had just rolled onto my phone.
Oh, fuck.
And I had hit 911.
I've done that so many times in my bunk, bro.
So I hear, hello, hello, hello. And I finally go, hello. And she goes, are you okay? And I'm like, who's this? And she's like,
911.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. She goes, listen, if he's in the room, just say yes. And I'm like, wait, what? And she goes, we've heard everything. We've heard he's got a gun.
My God.
And I'm like, no. I think we're confused here. And she goes, no, it's okay. I've already called the police. They're on their way. And I'm like, dear, I'm watching a movie. And she's like, what? And I'm like, I fell asleep. She goes,
wait, there's no gunman in your room right now?
And I said, no. And she goes, oh my God, hold on. And before she can say, hold on, there's a knock at the door. And I'm like, hello? And they're like, this is the Montreal Police Department. And I was like, okay, but there's a mistake. And so they're like, just open the door, sir. And I was like, oh my God. So I opened the door. These dudes got their guns drawn and they're like, where is he? Is he in the shower? And I'm like, no, dude, there's nobody here. So they're like, wait, what? So they come in and they literally check my whole bath. They check the whole thing. And I got weed out. I've got fucking, and I'm like, and they're like,
okay, what's going on? I'm like,
bro, I work for City in Color, this and that. I'm on tour. And he's like, and they're looking at me like,
really, dude? Really? Like, really? And I was just like,
can I offer you guys tickets? And they're like,
dude, we love City in Color.
And sure enough. So the next day they came and they got to meet the band and they got to take pictures and they told the whole story. And I was so fucking embarrassed, bro. It was just like guns drawn by the fucking Canadian police. And I'm just sitting there from a movie that I had leaned onto the fucking phone, dude. I was like, I go, this only happens on tour. Only happens on tour, dude.
That was the worst update is the triple click of the power button, like sends you to 911.
Yeah, exactly. And I had just rolled onto it with my arm sleeping.
Bro, I have done that it was five times and I finally Googled and was like, I need to turn this fucking feature off because I keep calling 911 at 1 in the morning.
Oh my. And mind you, the bands were like, wait, what? And I was like, yeah, this happened.
this happened. This happened. Yeah, that's an amazing tour story. Yes.
Road life, man. That's how it works.
Yeah, dude. Well, before we wrap this up, I just wanted to say thanks, host. You're one of the people that I really respect and admire. And man, thank you for coming on and talking to us and sharing your perspectives, bro.
Bro, it's been an honor for me to be on this. And anybody that does listen to this, I hope the one thing that they do get out of it is just be true to yourself. Don't worry about the rest, because in the end of the day, being true to yourself will get you exactly where you need to go. That's just it.
That's it.
So I appreciate it, brother.
Dude, fucking love you, man. Hope to see you soon.
I love you too, man.
Hope to go fucking record shopping together.
Thank you so much for having me. Oh, yeah, bro. I'll be sending you pictures of everything I buy.
Same.
Right on, homie.
Right on, man. I'll see you soon.
Definitely, man. You guys be safe.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to give us a like, subscribe, and a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and on Instagram @StageRightPodcast. Thank you.